the tragedy that lives inside, all the sadness that he tries to hide, won't keep him from coming to your defense, even if it is at his expense. And he may fall, but he will never fight your battles one by one. He's a good son, such a good son, yeah, a good son. He's a good. Of your world is his cross to bear. The fate of your life is in every prayer. No matter what the cost, he will pay the price. No matter what for you, he will sacrifice. And in his eyes is a world of damage done, but his heart won't quit till your war is won. Like a good son, such a good son, yeah, a good son. He's a good. Take the bullet for what you have done. Yeah, he's a good son.
Via dial-up in Del Mar, California, or whether you are listening via cable connection in Costa Rica, we welcome you to the Great American Radio Show, albeit on internet television. This is, of course, program number 88 of the FDH Lounge, and we start with a very special note here tonight on the program. Good evening, your dignitaries in residence for the FDH Lounge, Rick Morris, Paul Belfi, and we've got a very special treat here at the outset tonight. We are skipping, for the time being, the opening statements of the FDH Lounge dignitaries and our look at this week in the FDH Lounge. We have a very special guest right off the bat here. This is a big thrill for me personally to be able to do this segment. You always want to try and get accomplished names in whatever field for a show such as this, and we're very happy with the stable of guests that we've been able to line up over time, particularly in the last year or so as it relates to Steve Cervillo, our producer, who helped make this interview happen. But some of these ones go beyond the fact that you want to get a name person and talk to somebody accomplished, and it gets to a thing where you really enjoy it personally. And I have to say, I'm a big mark for so much of what this guy has done. I will say, in my first cassette when I was a kid, which I got riding back from Vegas as a youth, purchased at the Las Vegas Kmart back in the day. I listened to it all the way back across country, Rock and Soul Part 2. So that makes it especially fun to be able to bring in a man who is one half of one of the greatest units in the history of music, and somebody who is pursuing now his second solo album. I speak, of course, of the one and only John Oates. John, welcome to the FDH Lounge. Pleasure to have you on, sir.
Hey, guys. How you doing, man?
Hey, it's really good to have you, John. It's great to have you here, member of the Songwriters Hall of Fame. You guys have had such a tremendous career together. Of course, we're very familiar with everything that you and your partner have done over the time. I got a chance in the last 24 hours we received here at the studio your CD, 1,000 Miles of Life. I've been listening to a little bit of it. We were playing a little bit of that right before you came on. Talk about what you wanted to do with this project. It gives you creatively a chance to go, obviously, in a completely different direction. And we can hear some things on there, particularly the title track, you know, where it's rocking a little bit harder than your typical Hall & Oates track.
Well, you know, I have a real kind of a American roots rock and blues background, that things that I was doing even before I met Daryl way back in the dark ages. And you know, on this album, I really wanted to explore that. I went down to Nashville, and I met a whole bunch of people that I really respected, a lot of really great players, like people like Jerry Douglas and Sam Bush, and from the world of bluegrass, and Steve Cropper, one of my guitar heroes. And some of the singers on the album are like Becca and Bonnie Bramlett, and you probably remember Bonnie from Delaney and Bonnie way back in the day. So it was just a chance to really kind of get into a much more guitar-oriented singer-songwriter, rock and blues kind of thing.
You know, it's interesting, too, as I was listening to that, and of course, this being your second go-round with doing a solo project, I'm sure you had a chance to think about this the first time around and further kind of incorporate what you wanted to do. But how different, how strange is it maybe after all of those years? And as you pointed out, obviously you'd done some things before you hooked up with Daryl Hall, but you'd done so much with him for so many years. You're in a situation now, instead of blending harmonies with your partner, as I'm listening to the CD, it's just jarring because it's your voice, and anything that we hear from any of the background singers, they're just there to kind of support you. How strange is it to be in that kind of a role?
Well, you know, it's not that strange. I mean, Daryl is such a great singer that, you know, his voice has become the trademark sound of Hall & Oates and all the big hits. And, you know, you never take that away from him because we do something together that we just can't ever do separately. So that's why I went out of my way to do something completely different. And, you know, interestingly enough, all the background vocals on the new album are with women. And I've actually never in my career actually sung with girls and women. And I thought that would be a cool thing to do, something different. It would give it a different sound and really set it apart. Because after all, you know, the last thing I want to do is try to make a Hall & Oates record without Hall, and vice versa. So I really wanted it to be different. A lot of the lyrics are really personal. It's kind of a little bit more grown up kind of record, I guess you'd say. And I did it in Nashville, and all those things set it apart.
Yeah, it's really striking in that way because as you say, it has really a different kind of a sound to it. When you listen to it, you're not really in any way thinking of Hall & Oates, and really it seems to me, and I think probably to a lot of the people out there that are listening, and along the lines of what you just said, that would be the very point of it, right? Because, you know, like when Keith Richards did his first solo album from the Stones, people were expecting something to be completely different, and it was. I mean, there wouldn't be much point to doing a John Oates solo album if you were just trying to replicate it without Daryl Hall, right?
No, absolutely. Yeah, that's it. And in that regard, I think it was a really successful record because, as you said, it does not sound at all like that.
Yeah, it really is indicative, obviously, of your ability to branch out and get into some of these other influences. And, you know, we've talked with other musicians on the show from time to time, and Jimmy Jamison is somebody that comes to mind as far as somebody who likes to blend a lot of different influences into the music here. So you referenced going down to Nashville and getting together with some of the folks down there in the studio. What were some of the different directions that you wanted to incorporate into this?
Well, you know, I wanted to be very guitar-oriented, and also I just wanted to, the lyrics were really important to me on this album. And I knew that in Nashville I would find the type of musicians and type of players who really knew how to frame a lyric and support a lyric. And that was very important to me. And, you know, after all, when you think about it, not to say that my album is country, because it is not country by any means, but when you think of musicians who play on a lot of these country songs, the lyrics are so important to those songs. And so I wanted to take that same sensibility to my music.
Well, that's an interesting way of approaching it there. I have to ask you also, this is something that my producer, Steve Cervillo, who got you booked, and I'm very grateful for that, wanted me to ask you about. He, of course, was able to get your contact information through the New York Songwriters Circle. He wanted me to ask you about that, and I guess as regards doing a solo album here, can you talk about the influences from that group and how that ties into your whole creative process?
Well, I've been involved with the New York Songwriter Circle for a few years now. In fact, in this past year, I was one of the judges at their amateur songwriting finals, and it was a great event with a lot of amazing new talent. And I just I always liked the idea of mentorship. I liked the idea of bringing up new songwriters, of encouraging and fostering new writers, because I think, you know, the music business is based on songwriting. It always has been. Without great songs, you really don't have much. So that's been a big part of what I do. I run a songwriting contest for kids here in Colorado where I live, and I also have a series that I call The Stories Behind the Songs, where I have songwriters come out to Colorado, and we perform at one of the theaters here in town. And I like to do it in a very natural, raw, you know, way. You know, just a songwriter with his guitar sitting on stage, no band, no production. And it really, what it does is it really strips away all the superfluous stuff, and it brings it right back to the essence of the song itself, and that's really the key.
In terms of influences from other songwriters and other performers, of course, that leads to talking about collaborative projects such as We Are the World, which, you know, hard to believe, 25 year anniversary from that project. That was another question that our producer wanted me to ask you. This was a very good question on his part here. Is there anything that you're hearing through the grapevine as far as any type of comparable project with the Haitian earthquake situation?
I have not heard of anything on a big scale, although I don't doubt that it's probably being tossed around by a lot of people. We have a local event that we're doing on February 11th in Aspen, Colorado, for the benefit of the Haitian people, and there's some good friends of mine run an orphanage down there, and they're very proactive, and they always have been with Haiti. So we're doing a little thing on our part on a local level, and I think it's pretty important that people do everything on a local level, and you know, the sum total can be very powerful.
Oh, that's excellent. Is there going to be information about that as time goes by? It's going to be on your website, johnoates.com?
Oh, it'll be on the website. It's February 11th at the Wheeler Opera House in Aspen, Colorado. Oh. And we're going to have a lot of local musicians play. I'll go out and do a couple songs. And it's really a grassroots, local fundraiser is what it is. And, you know, if people in every town did something like this, I think, you know, there'd be some serious impact.
Absolutely. I'm glad that you mentioned that and got a chance to talk about that. I hope that folks will go check out your website and get some more information on that. You know, you've mentioned Colorado, which is your present locale. I know that, typically whenever anybody really thinks of you guys, they think of Philadelphia. They think of the roots there, you know, the whole Philly blue-eyed soul thing.
Mm-hmm.
You guys being one of the biggest exports really ever to come out of there. Something that it just has kind of struck me, I don't know if it's ever struck you in talking with fans, that, for me, typically, most of the stuff I've got on my iPod or CD collection or whatever is generally a little bit harder edged, but I am a huge Hall & Oates guy. I talked to a lot of other people that are the same way. It just seems to be kind of this odd vibe that even the people that you wouldn't necessarily think on the surface are going to be Hall & Oates fans really are. Do you ever get struck by that in terms of talking to people, that it really sometimes tends to be an outlier, that there's a lot of people that are Hall & Oates fans that you might not even think on the surface are?
Well, you know, over the years, I think some of our, you know, the biggest support that we've ever had, above and beyond the audience out there, has been from like other musicians, and it's been amazing to hear the type of musicians who like the work that Daryl and I have done over the years. I mean, like I said, everything from bluegrass to country to heavy rock. I mean, I remember Axl Rose one time telling me that one of his favorite songs was this really kind of sensitive ballad that was on one of our earlier albums, which really surprised me. So we do get that a lot, and I think it has to do with the quality of the songwriting that we've been able to create over the years.
Yeah, Axl Rose, I guess that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about right there. Yeah, I mean, that's on the surface you wouldn't necessarily identify him with that, but yeah, he just loves, you know, the music so much. But it's an odd thing too. I mean, what does it feel like to be in a situation with the legacy that you guys have had, to where at any point in time when you're flipping the dial, something's liable to pop up? I'll tell you, yesterday, you know, your representation, I spoke with a gentleman from your office. He called me when I was on my lunch hour in my car, talked to him for a little bit. You know, 10 minutes later, I'm channel surfing as I always do, and what is it? I think she's gone. Pops on the radio. I mean, what does that feel like to know that at any point in time you could hear one of these songs pop up somewhere?
Well, you know, it feels great. I mean, as a songwriter, I think, you know, the standard that you set for yourself is to write something that stands the test of time. And, that's the ultimate goal of every songwriter. And, you know, some of our songs have really done that, and they sound, you know, every bit as good and contemporary today as you know, anything. And, in that regard, I'm very, very proud, and I'm really proud of the legacy that Daryl and I have created together. And it's very gratifying. It's great, very gratifying to have had this long of a career in a very tough business, and be able to still do what I want to do and make music for a living. It's pretty nice.
Well, the great thing is also too that you guys haven't really been locked in any kind of a set pattern here. We're broken up, we're together, or whatever. I mean, you've put out two solo albums in the last decade here, while in between doing the Christmas album, which actually I got a couple of years ago as well here. So as you're following the solo path here with the John Oates music, what does the future hold for you and your partner? What are you guys looking at doing as far as any potential touring or other projects in that?
Well, realm? You know, we always work. We work all the time together, and we intend to continue to do it. We have no reason to stop. We have the freedom to do individual solo projects, which keeps our creative juices flowing. We can work together and basically represent the history and the legacy of what we've created together. Right now, there's no plans of doing a new album together. Daryl has an internet broadcast that he does. We just released a box set of basically our whole career called Do What You Want, Be What You Are, and that's on Sony. It just came out, and people just really love it. It's got tons of tracks that have been unreleased and never heard before. So I don't know. You know, in a way, Daryl and I kind of joke. We say that our future, our history is our future. And right now, that's what it is. In terms of new stuff, I think it's coming more from the individual side.
Yeah, exactly. And that makes sense, because that's where you're having the creative juices that are coming up, and you've got audiences that are always going to be regenerating for that. And by the way, we also got that sent to our studio here, too, this box set I'm holding up for the camera, Do What You Want, Be What You Are, the music of Daryl Hall and John Oates. And it is tremendous stuff, no question about that. That's a thing, too, in terms of your fans, and again, I kind of keep coming back to that because of the longevity of you guys in terms of performing and everything like that. I would imagine you probably run the gamut when you're at shows. You probably have folks in the audience who are probably even significantly older than myself, ranging down to, I'm guessing, teens or maybe even a little bit younger. Do you see that vast disparity in the ages at your shows?
We have always had a very wide wide age range in our audience, and it's, you know, as our audience has gotten older, I think they've turned on their kids and whatever to our music, but also our music has really reached a lot of young kids because of all the things that have happened with the movie 500 Days of Summer, and that used You Make My Dreams Come True in such a prominent way in that movie, and also a lot of the new bands, people like the Killers, Gym Class Heroes, and those guys who have talked to their fans about how influential we were to them, and now a whole group of new fans have kind of checked us out because of their because of the new bands that they like.
It's just really interesting, too, the tapestry of a career like yours. As I was preparing for the interview, I was looking here, I mean, there were some things I came across that I didn't know that even surprised me. I mean, there's another 80s tune that I liked, and I don't know if Paul Belfie on the other side of the glass knows this, but co-writing and singing backup on Electric Blue by Ice House. I had no idea you were involved with that, but that was... You know, you've just had so many great things over the years. It's just the chance to collaborate on stuff like that and work with as many musicians. I mean, that just obviously has to mean so much to you in terms of, you know, the totality of what you've accomplished.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, collaborating, whether it's collaborating with Daryl Hall or collaborating with other people, is really the magic that drives everything. I think, you know, every once in a while, you know, you write something on your own and it's a real personal expression, but I think some of the best stuff is stuff that where people are sharing creative ideas. And I love collaborating. You know, when you get people on the same page and really working together to do something, greater than the sum of its parts, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of collaboration, and I look forward to doing that as often as I can.
Well, of course, everybody can continue to follow what you're doing at your website, johnoates.com. And right now, when they go there, it's prominently displayed how they can get information on finding 1,000 Miles of Life and information about your CD, which is very good. Is there anything else that we didn't cover, John, that you'd like the people to know about? Anything you'd like to plug?
Well, you know, Daryl and I are going to be doing some touring this spring. We're going to be down in the South. We'll be in Florida and Memphis and coming, working our way up to the Northeast in May, late April and May. So we're doing some dates here and there. And, let's see, we're playing in Jamaica next week in the islands. That's going to be a lot of fun. And in the meantime, I'm getting ready to do a new album. It's going to be a kind of a bluesy album. And, just thinking about stuff, man. Just trying to live my life and have a good time and play my guitar.
Excellent. Well, it's been a heck of a career thus far, John. We look forward to seeing how it continues to unfold. Big thrill for us here tonight, John. You have no idea. And we'd love to have you back sometime, sir.
Well, thanks for having me.
Great. Thanks very much. The one and only John Oates, everybody. We're very glad to have him on the FDH Lounge here tonight.